This study reveals a practice of government which was hidden in plain sight. We've been taught, we've been told, it has been our understanding over so many years that reparations would be unusual, it would be exceptional, it would be aberrational, when in fact, reparations is regular and routine. How so? There is a norm, a kind of guide, a practice in the federal government of helping people who have been harmed through no fault of their own. What we call reparatory compensation. If a farmer has a crop that fails, the government will oftentimes assist that farmer in recovering the loss.
Your report indicates there's even precedent for racial reparations.
That's right. So, in the wake of World War II, we had Japanese Americans in concentration camps in the middle of the country. And following World War II, the government extended two sets of reparations for the suffering of Japanese Americans in terms of their incarceration, in terms of their loss of livelihood, and the disruption of their lives. Two sets of reparations were extended to Japanese Americans over the course of a generation. These were modest amounts of money for a massive amount of suffering. That's one instance of racial reparations. The second instance of racial reparations would be the case of Native Americans whose lands were taken, whose mineral rights were misused, misappropriated by the federal government, to resulting in the loss of millions upon millions of dollars. And in that instance, the government extended reparations to Japanese Americans in terms of cash payments for not only those who were directly harmed, but also their descendants over multiple generations. Why is this important? It's important because if we think about Japanese reparations, if we think about reparations for Native Americans, but even larger than that, the reparations that go to non-racial harms over the course of literally 70 some odd programs, billions of dollars. We know then that we can do reparations for Black Americans. We also show in the paper that we spend not thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but millions of dollars, even billions of dollars. In fact, the COVID relief that most Americans experience is a form of reparatory compensation, another form of reparations. We help people who have been hurt through no fault of their own.
Why not African Americans? Why is there such pushback, particularly if it's already been done for other races?
The resistance here is twofold. First, there's racial animus among some, I think a diminishing number of people who are relatively few in number compared to the many who object to reparations because they think it is too hard to do, too expensive to do for harm that occurred too long ago. And so the paper really addresses the second set of objections. And so when we look at the polling, many Americans think that the federal government couldn't do something like this. Well, think about the fact that literally the federal government finds a way to get 70 million Social Security checks in the hands of the elderly and children on a monthly basis. Think about the fact that we insure the bank accounts of literally millions of Americans. And we do that on a regular and recurring basis. And we think of that as normal.
And when you're talking about a large-scale compensation type program like Social Security, there was another one that you mentioned in your report in regards to compensating people who are exposed to dangerous levels of radiation in 12
That's right.
states. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So the federal government, in its development of nuclear weapons, exposed people across 12 states and the Marshall Islands to nuclear radiation from nuclear bombs. People whose families were affected by this radiation, direct victims, indirect victims, and their descendants, called for hearings in Washington. They wrote letters. They called for reparations, if you will, for their health and for the well-being of their communities. And the government responded by providing cash payments, health care, economic assistance to direct victims, indirect victims, and their descendants. Let's contrast how we treated people who endured nuclear radiation and nuclear bombs falling upon their communities in the Marshall Islands and in 12 states to the citizens of Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. The Tulsa racial massacre, we heard from living witnesses, there were Black people, Black communities, Black children, Black homes and businesses that were bombed. Neighborhoods were burned. People were murdered. And here we are 100 years later with less than a handful of centurions, that is to say American citizens over 100 years of age, still begging, still asking, still suing for reparations. And what our papers proves is what we did for those citizens in 12 states who endured nuclear bomb radiation, we can do for a handful, relative handful of African-American citizens in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who endured conventional bombs 100 years ago.
How many people do you estimate would receive reparations for slavery in the U.S.?
We don't fully know. We would know the answers to that if we convene a national commission to study not only reparations, but what we call reparatory compensation, studying not only what we could do, but studying what, in fact, we have done. We would have numbers in terms of how many people need reparations and how much it would be. But there's one thing I think is really important here. Reparations is not merely about checks. Because what we discover in studying the reparations that go for non-racial harms is that we use checks, we use scholarships, we use economic assistance to communities, we use educational assistance, we use loans, and we finance with a variety of strategies. What's the point here? Is that the federal government actually has programmatic imagination, fiscal creativity when it comes to meeting the needs of everyday Americans. And so what we have done leads us to believe that we can actually do for Black Americans in America's racial harms what we've done for so many over such a long period of time.